CliffCentral.com.
Please note that the views expressed and the advice provided in this show are for general advice and entertainment purposes only. Nothing stated should be treated as a substitute for your own independent legal advice based on your own specific facts and objectives. Therefore, the presenter and CliffCentral.com accept no liability of any nature whatsoever, either expressed or implied.
Law, like you've never heard it before. The Laws of Life with Gary Hertzberg on CliffCentral.com.
I'm Gary Hertzberg, and this is the Laws of Life on CliffCentral.com. Alongside me today, Lionel Makoko-Klela. Welcome, Lions.
Dumela, Gary, and Dumela to our podcasters and to our wonderful guests today.
So today we have three lawyers in studio to answer your questions on family law. I'm one of them, and the other two I'll introduce to you in a moment.
Am I regarded as a lawyer?
Not nearly, Lions, not okay, quite. As you know, for the last 2 weeks, we've teamed up with Legal Talk South Africa. If you haven't heard of Legal Talk South Africa, it's a web page linked to a Facebook page, which has close to 110,000 members, hundreds of whom post legal questions one after the other. And the stream of these questions, Lions, as you know, is thick and fast. And by the time you've read one legal question, there are another 10 in its place.
Certainly.
Yeah. Some of the questions that are posted need a more detailed response. So I've linked up with Ray Green, the founder of Legal Talk South Africa, and we're going to take some of those questions you ask on your Facebook page, and we'll get answers on my show every week, week after week. The first week we dealt with consumer issues and the Consumer Protection Act, and last week we tackled property law issues. If you've missed any of those podcasts, please take a listen. They were really interesting. You sat through them both, Lions.
Certainly.
You were there for both. Yep.
Very wonderful. It was just a fountain of knowledge, and I think the partnership is great because we get to really learn about the people's day-to-day experiences.
Talking of podcasts, did you know that Cliff Central today is the biggest podcaster in Africa with millions of podcasts
Woohoo!
Having been downloaded from the Cliff Central site?
We are the best.
We are the biggest. Started by Gareth Cliff and Rena Broomberg. Today we've extracted some of your questions on family law matters, and joining me to discuss them are two more attorneys. Ladies first, it's Marisa Kurz, K-U-R-Z. She's from Clark's Attorneys.
Afternoon, listeners.
Good. And then we also have Ian Ellis, A-L-L-I-S. You from which firm, Ian?
I now have my own firm, Ellis Attorneys. Good afternoon to the listeners as well.
Good. You were recommended, Ian, by Ray Green of Legal Talk South Africa.
I have assisted in a couple of matters involving Legal Talk South Africa users and subscribers.
Excellent. Our email address, law@cliffcentral.com. Our Facebook page, The Laws of Life with Gary Hertzberg. And our Twitter handle, Lionel Loves to Give.
At Hertzlaw, H-E-R-T-Z-L-A-W. And you can actually touch base with us on our WhatsApp line, which is 079-748-2090. 079-748-2090.
Cool. Most of our listeners listen on podcasts. They download the show after the show, and then they listen in their car whenever they like. It's a
true
pleasure.
But the
people that download are people that really are interested in the subject matter.
Certainly.
They're not half listeners like guys in the radio that are half listening. These are people that really want to hear answers.
That's right.
Good. We have a number of questions, so let's fire away. Linda from Pretoria. Sevel via goeie dag sê sy wil net uitvind wat kan mens doen as kinders se pa die hof bevel verontagsaam. I'll translate it. Ons is 2 jaar geskei en volgens 'n hofbevel sê dit dat onderhoud jaarliks moet verhoog word, as ook dat hy elke kwartaal vir elke kind R500 se klere moet koop. Right, so what's going on here is that the father of the two children who they obviously divorced has ignored the court order which provides that the maintenance must be increased annually, automatically, and that he's got to pay R500 per child for the clothing. It's 2 years, and hy het nog nie een van die twee gedoen nie. It's disgusting, actually, that fathers can treat their kids this way, but who am I to say? William Mayer gave us some advice. He says, gaan terug hof toe, en stel hulle in kennis dat hy die bevel verontagsaam. Is it that simple, Marisa?
Look, it is and it isn't. The first thing to note is that you don't need to go back to court for an automatic increase. It must be automatically applied, and the father ought to pay that automatically. If he does not and he's in default, then yes, you go back to court, you quantify your claim, and you ask the court to enforce that. For okay, the arrears.
So it was a good idea when she got divorced to provide in the divorce order in the agreement that the maintenance will be increased annually by a certain amount.
Absolutely.
And that's what divorce lawyers or family lawyers should suggest.
Absolutely. The standard, the bog standard, is by the CPI increase annually. So from the year post your divorce, then that must increase annually. But another figure percentage can be decided on between the parties, because this is obviously in a agreed settlement.
This poor lady, Linda, says, hey, dreig me. He's threatening me that if I go to court and get a lawyer, then he's going to get a lawyer. And then he says, ek hoop my papier weg is reg. And he goes on and on. He's threatening her. How dare he? But he does. He also wants her to quantify the thing she buys for the kids with the maintenance money. He says she must split it. She must show him what she spends for her or for the kids. What's your answer to all this, Ian?
I disagree with that, because at the end of the day, Gary, when a person reaches an agreement, and that agreement is made in order of court, there's no going back on it 6 months later and say, how is my money being allocated? How do you wish to allocate my money? At the end of the day, then you should have gone ahead and dealt with that at the outset. There's no coming back. What you can go ahead and say is that you could show that you've complied and that you've provided for X amount in that. That's a different story. But at the end of the day, once that horse is bolted, you can't say, oh, well, now I want to know how it's allocated. Otherwise,
it's impossible, because you're paying rent for exactly. yourself and the kids, and you're buying food for yourself and the kids. You can't split it. It's a stupid thing. He's threatening her with nonsense. Am I right, Marisa?
Correct. Yeah. And I do want to say that obviously during the negotiation process, that quantification would have happened. If you say, for example, I'm going to get 500 rand for clothes, there was a reason why that figure was decided upon. Yeah. So now to ask for further explanation is just unfair. As to his threats, I feel firstly that she should let him get a lawyer. That should be great, because hopefully he ends up with a specialist family lawyer and can explain to him he's contravening a court order. But secondly, if he continues and it becomes abusive or harassing, then she can avail herself to the court once again and get a protection order against him.
Excellent. And Neen Labeskagni writes on Legal Talk. She says, "Moet jou nie steer nie aan sy bangmaak stories nie." I like that one. Don't let him threaten you with nonsense.
Absolutely.
The question is, assuming that the father who's undertook to pay an automatic increase and 500 rand a month loses his job or gets demoted, what does he do?
At that stage, the onus is on the father to go to court and ask for a variation of the order. Children's maintenance is a fluid thing. You have a court order in place, but if there is a material, substantial change in your circumstances, such as losing your job, then you can go back to the maintenance court. But you have that positive duty to do that. You can't just sit back and say, oh, well, I can't pay, because there is a court order in place, and that must be honored and respected.
And at the end of the day, this arrears will keep on running and racking up. So it's also the onus is on the person's wanting the reduction to do it and do it quickly, not to sit and waste 5-6 years and then say, oh, well, I didn't have a job, because then that's not going to fly. And at the end of the day, the court has imposed some pretty stringent penalties on people doing this.
Excellent advice. We're moving quickly today because we've got a lot to cover. I have another issue on maintenance. It comes from Kim, K-I-M. She says, I have a son of 16. I never married his father. She goes on and on and on. He tried to dispute paternity. Maar in elk geval, she says here that he paid a bit. It, and then when the boy was 5, he stopped paying.
What?
And he's lived in various countries all over, and he's not paying anymore. She asks this question: would he be liable for back payment of this money, and would be the starting point? So let me ask you this question. Does, Marisa, you can take this one, does maintenance ever prescribe?
No.
So if you haven't paid for years...
Not in terms of a court order. There's a difference between an agreement reached between parties just verbally. There is no way to quantify that. But if you're talking about a maintenance court order, as Kim says she has, then no.
It acts as a court order, as a judgment. So it keeps on running on what was agreed to by the court.
Okay, the man has left the country, possibly. Mm. He's living elsewhere. Marisa, you want to take this one.
Yes.
Can I enforce the maintenance divorce order, or the court order that was made against him years ago? He's living now in Dubai, or he's living in
UK? I'm going to sound like an absolute lawyer now.
It depends.
So it does depend on which country, and I am sorry that she hasn't actually said that to us in the email. Mm. But let's say, for example, he has gone to Australia or Canada, to the United Kingdom, New Zealand, a lot of countries we see South Africans go to frequently. There is a law called the Reciprocal Enforcement of Maintenance Orders Act, very long, REMO, and that says that you can go to court in our country at a normal cost, so normal maintenance court in whatever your jurisdiction is, and that maintenance court then sends through the issue to the court in the other jurisdiction, and they then run the matter in that jurisdiction to hold him accountable reciprocally with our country.
Okay, so let's go slowly.
Yes.
I live in South Africa.
Yes.
The husband lives in the UK.
Yes.
He hasn't paid. I go to the local magistrates court. In South Africa. How do they get the process served? Who's paying for that? To get
the
that
state.
Summons? The state pays.
The state
for that.
Pays.
No
for
cost
that.
To me.
No. Look, you are always entitled to go to the other country at your own cost and go and sue them in
it's
that
too expensive.
Court.
I want to do it.
It is way expensive.
Yeah.
The problem is, of course, if the country is not a signatory. But if they are a signatory, you go to your local court. You say, my husband has moved to the UK or to New Zealand or to Zimbabwe,
as though he
Zambia,
was in Cape Town.
As though he was in Cape Town.
Yeah.
Obviously, the process is a lot longer, so you're going to have to be patient. Yeah. But you start the process in this court, and it's almost as a part-heard matter. It gets heard this day, then it goes to the other country, gets heard there in their court, and they apply the reciprocal order that was granted here in our South African court.
What happens if he doesn't, Ian? What happens if he doesn't come to court in South Africa?
Well, basically, if it's in one of those countries where there's the treaty, where there's the reciprocal enforcement agreement, then basically they will penalise him in accordance with the law. So
can he be arrested?
He can, in fact, be arrested.
So
it's very rare, but he can be arrested.
The court here will issue a warrant of arrest because he hasn't appeared, and that warrant gets sent over to the UK if he's living there, and he gets arrested there.
He appears in court there.
Oh, he appears there.
Okay. Exactly, and that's where they can. That's where if one could say the sentence and the conviction of that country is in actual fact the one that actually stands. So ultimately, at the end of the day, if they have a harsher way of dealing with people on default on maintenance, he's going to suffer the wrath of the American penal system.
But then how do I, as the complainant, get over to the UK? Who's going to...
You don't.
You don't.
You go to court here and run the process here.
And he runs it there.
And he runs it there. Okay. And the two courts cooperate in that regard reciprocally so that there is not that cost to it. Look, it is a bit of a complex procedure, but... If you do not have funds, you go to the maintenance court. You say, listen, this is where he is. Is it one of these countries? They have a list. They will advise you. Mm. And they tell you how to do this. That's what the maintenance offices are there for.
Where can we find the list of which countries are part of the treaty?
Just online. Just, okay.
If you got a website for us, maybe?
I'll have to double check for you.
Okay. We're going to move on while you're checking, Marisa. If you can't find it, I guess we can Google it.
Yes, definitely can.
This comes from Rihanna, not the famous Rihanna Lines. It comes from Rihanna from George. They say, good day, I'm looking for advice, please. We are four children, she says. My mother, 72, has been living with us for 8 years. My husband and I get the heaviest of all our children financially. The other children have never made any contributions towards their mother. How do I make the others also help with food, petrol, and all the rest? It was written in Afrikaans, but we've translated it. So the question is there a duty, Ian, on children to support their parents?
It's most definite, yes, there is. However, now I'm going to be the lawyer on this one and say the circumstances, however, depend. Because it's got to take a look at the ability of those other children to, in actual fact, support their parents. Mm. So if they are in the parents themselves, it cannot just be the case of that they want to be supported. They have to show a need for that support and that maintenance. That they're indigent, they'd be bordering on becoming homeless. They can't just say if they're sitting on a nest egg, I want my children to support me. Mm. Then that reciprocal duty is not quite so clear cut, unless of Unless just basically the last
stuff. So indigent means that you need money to put food on the table.
Precisely.
Basically.
You're impoverished.
Yeah, you're impoverished.
And not like Woolworths, like genuine bread and butter food.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So there's
not
a caviar. Duty.
Yeah,
so not caviar.
We can tell Rihanna that all the children, all her siblings need to contribute.
Correct.
Not just
and if they don't,
yeah, what happens?
She can also go to her local maintenance court within her jurisdiction and say, listen, I am bearing the brunt of this, but we all are the closest relatives, the four of us. Yeah. They are not doing their part, even though they are able to, and I need a maintenance order against all of them to support.
She, the one daughter, can bring it against her siblings.
Yeah, because it's on behalf of.
Yes, it's on behalf of her parents.
On behalf of her parents. Mm. Excellent advice. Terrific. So there's no need for this poor woman to contribute or pay towards her mother solely.
Not more than what she's able to. Look, of course, it is a different circumstance if she was in a much better financial position than the rest of her siblings.
Yeah.
But if they're all sort of on the same level, then there's no reason why she needs to bear the brunt of it. The other kids must step up and help.
Correct. And in fact, the parents themselves can actually also approach the maintenance court. It mustn't be forgotten. Yep. They're adults. They can also, if they want to, and it's a difficult scenario, they can also approach the maintenance court themselves.
Mm. Yeah, one parent, it's cliched by now, one mother can look after 10 children, but 10 children can't look after one mother.
You know,
it's a tragedy, isn't it?
So
it's
tragic.
It's becoming more prevalent as well.
I found the website, just to go back to the previous question before we move on.
Yep.
It's on the justice website. So it's justice.gov.za, and it's just the DOJ website, and you just look under maintenance, and it is the Reciprocal Enforcement of Maintenance Orders Act, and there's a little list.
So there's no, if your ex-spouse or the father of your children is living elsewhere in the world, you can follow him to the ends of the earth, as they say, and you should. If there's a reciprocal duty,
if there's
a treaty. Yeah. Here's a posting from Legal Talk South Africa. It's from a member who's running quite a risk. Let me tell you what he says. Amogelang, he writes, my friend was in a marriage. It's always a friend, but anyway, let's accept it's his friend. He was married.
Let's look at a hypothetical.
My friend was in a marriage in community of property with this girl, and this girl started to cheat and all that. And she moved out. They didn't have much. They didn't have much money or assets at the time, but what he's worried about now is they married in community of property and no one has instituted a divorce. They've remained separated, could be for ages. His worry is, what happens if one of them gets a lot of money lines, or one of them incurs a lot of debt? Well, now hold on a second. Assuming there's no divorce going on and they just let it slide, and year after year after year, nothing happens. They're still married to one another. What's the answer, Ian?
I guess you're going to have to quote Barney on this one. Sharing is caring.
Yeah.
Because you will be going ahead and paying out half of whatever it is.
What's the practical advice, Marisa?
Look, practically, he just has to get on with a divorce. In South Africa, we have what's called a no-fault system. So you can be plaintiff or defendant, no matter who started the divorce, no matter who cheated. You can go to court and say, I'd like to get divorced. And you can carry on with that divorce process so that you get that in community of property division done. It is only upon divorce that sort of regime ends. And so it is really important that action is taken.
So if you stay separated, you run the risk.
Absolutely.
Of your partner incurring or your spouse incurring a hell of a lot of debts for which you will be half liable as a partner in community of property.
It's the same whether you're married in community or with the accrual system. It runs until date of divorce, and issuing the summons doesn't change that. It is date of divorce right at the end, so you really need to get on with it.
There is also one proviso, I can go ahead and also raise, one can bring, and this has got to be through the High Court. There's no way you can bring it through regional court. You can bring an application that as at a certain date that the assets accrued during the course of the marriage and liabilities accrued after a certain date stops accruing to both parties. But number one, that's actually a very expensive application, and it basically it delays the inevitable. The parties need to get divorced because it contradicts our concept of a clean split divorce, because it allows the parties just to continue arguing ad infinitum, and then they think there's no risk.
There's a posting by Lyndon Cottrell, which he says what you said, Marisa. He says it makes no difference who starts the divorce, whether you're plaintiff or defendant. It absolutely does make no difference.
It really doesn't. Yeah. You can, but look, the only it's practical stuff.
Practical,
so
yeah.
Who goes to court, or you know, who has to paginate papers, those sort of things. But really, at the end of the day, you will both get a chance as plaintiff and as defendant to have your say and put forward your reasons for the breakdown, to be able to actually explain your position to the court. So it doesn't matter in divorce matters whether you're the plaintiff or the defendant. You can say in there, she cheated on me, she was the bad person, she wants a divorce, and so I'm asking for it. You don't have to say, I want a divorce, because I understand certain people have a religious or moral sort of objection to asking for it. But you can start the process and say, they have asked for it, but they're not doing anything. I would like to carry on with it.
Here's a question from Zelda. She lives in Qatar. She says the following. She posts in Afrikaans, Ek wil uitvind hoe lang dit neem om jou eie egskeiding af te handel as jy dit self hanteer. Can I do my own divorce, she says, and how long will it take? And then, hold on, Bernadette says, I need a divorce. Does this group have any files or papers or anything? I'm married in community of property. I don't know what to do. And Anine Labiskakhni replies, Bernadette, if the divorce is uncontested, you can do it yourself at the regional court. That may be a good idea. Who wants to take this one?
I'll take this first.
I just want to say the question of how long will it take? Well, how long is a piece of string?
Well, technically, that could still be measured.
I love these answers.
The thing is, one's got to look at a practical thing. Number one, if you need surgery, don't go off to... you don't try and do it yourself. But at the end of the day, it's got to be a practical aspect. Not everybody can afford an attorney. So with the regional courts, they do have people who can assist in their sections. You can give people the prefabricated summons and ask them basically fill in the missing blanks.
Correct.
The names, the parties, how much you're looking at, where you stay. Is you can do it that way, and often they'll go ahead and assist you through the process that you must take it to the sheriff, and they will serve it on the person, and then once they've served it, you can get a court date. Preferably as an attorney, if you actually are dealing with it, it's preferable to go through the High Court because the processes are a little bit different. But at the end of the day, the biggest factor is what is involved in that divorce. It comes all down to complexity and details. What assets have you got? What are there any investments? Are there children? And these are factors that make it very difficult to just do it simply yourself, because you might need family advocate reports. You might have to hand in other documentation relating to the children if there's been any complaints of abuse that have taken place. So yes, you can do it, but you must proceed with extreme caution, and there are other groups which Marisa can go ahead and elaborate more fully upon, which can also assist people.
Yeah, let's just talk about the regional court. The regional court that we talk about is at the magistrate's court.
Correct. Okay.
So you don't go further than your magistrate's court. If your divorce is simple, if there's no kids and there's no maintenance and there's no visitation rights and all the rest, you can hop along to the regional court. They'll fill out forms for you. It costs you just about nothing. And You can get divorced.
Correct. There are prefabricated forms. And I think that, you know, attorneys, we go to the High Court because there's a particular process there. And also, I just do want to make a point that there is a bit of a... The regional court can deal with divorce matters, but they can't deal with guardianship issues when it comes to children. Mm-hmm. So if you want to get divorced and move to England at the same time, then you have to go to High Court. So there is a bit of a disjoint as to what the regional court can and can't deal with. But again, if it's a simple issue, there's a division of a joint estate. It isn't a big, you know, there's a house and two cars and a policy. That sort of stuff, there is no reason why a person can't go to regional court and avail themselves of those processes if that is all they have available to them. Of course, we as lawyers would like you to have the money to come and let us help you and work towards a best settlement and be able to process that for you. But if you don't have those sort of funds available, that's what the regional court is there for.
Marisa, there's something I want to talk to you about. It's quite a serious issue. There are divorce lawyers and divorce lawyers.
Divorce
lawyers have got a bit of emotion and some are tough.
Yeah.
We call them boom, boom, bang, bang, divorce lawyers, they fire out and they want to get to court and they want to sue and they want to take everything they can get and so on. What is your view on that one?
Look, for me, family law really isn't the same as practicing any other kind of law. You cannot deal with it in the same manner. You have to understand that when you're done with the matter, let's say you litigated to the full extent, year and a half, 2 years later, you've ruined this family, but they still have kids and they still have to end up being parents, being able to communicate with one another. And so I believe it's not just a part of it, it's an obligation that you take on as a family lawyer, that you end up having to understand that you have to leave a family whole, mm-hmm. as whole as you can, and you need to work collaboratively with your opponent, not against them. You don't take points, you don't make issues where there isn't, you don't create drama and write me letters on Friday afternoons at 4 o'clock. You just don't do that in family law. It's a different way of practicing, which doesn't make it wrong. Mm. And we've actually established, with a whole bunch of other lawyers, the Gauteng Family Law Forum, which you can contact me about. And it's a voluntary association of lawyers, family lawyers, so attorneys and advocates, who are like-minded and would like to see the betterment in practice, both in terms of our opponents and how we deal with colleagues, as well as we address issues within the courts to make it better for individual people. For
are
the,
you attracting the boom, boom, bang, bang divorce lawyers to
we
that?
Really we
they
do.
Need to go there, I think.
We try to incorporate everybody because it is just getting the word out there. And it isn't, look, don't get me wrong, I love litigation and I love being a tough lawyer. Tough doesn't, however, mean ruining a family. Mm. So I'm not saying that we need to sort of kumbaya the whole thing up. Mm. I'm just saying there's a different approach to
Association
a family.
Of Gauteng Family Lawyer Forum, yes. Something like that. You can contact Marisa at Clark's Attorneys.
Correct.
In Sandton. There's a divorce attorney who said to his client, we're going to sue your husband till your money runs out.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, there's too many people who actually do implement that line of thought.
Just to add to what she's saying, I think she's acting more of a mediator as opposed to just basically becoming.
No, funnily enough, I'm not a mediator at all. I've been trained, but I wouldn't do mediation. Mm. I don't. I'm a litigator. So I say this even through the court process. It is the way you handle things. For example, your documents are due. I'm not going to hop up and down because it's one day late. Commercial lawyers might, because it gives strategic advantage, etc. Oh,
okay, okay. Yeah. Let's move on to something that I found very interesting. I didn't know about it, and I learned it on the Legal Talk SA Facebook page. There's a lot you can learn there and stuff you've got to be careful of, because a lot of people put answers up that are not always accurate.
Oh, yeah.
But here's one. Can you please give me the Home Affairs SMS number to check marital status? I didn't know you could do that.
Oh, you get. I have intimate knowledge of this.
Okay, so if you want to check whether the guy you've just met or the woman you've just met is married or not, you can SMS.
Yeah, and it's available on the Department of Home Affairs website.
What do you give, an ID number or something?
Yeah, so there's a number. I'm not too sure what the number
is. I've got the number here of their site, 32551. It says type M space ID number and send.
Correct. So you can also check other aspects. So on the Department of Home Affairs website, there's actually a whole list of sort of practical things you can check via SMS messages.
Yeah.
And it is really helpful.
Mm. If you meet a guy in a bar, if you're a young female and he says, no, I'm divorced, I've been divorced for years, check him out, ask him for his ID number. There you go.
I think he'd find that really weird.
Said she got it. She got it off the website, so it works.
Yeah.
Cool. Let's take this one I found really, really interesting. I couldn't resist raising this one. It says, I live in a complex. My neighbor's boyfriend just peed on my car in front of my own eyes.
Oh, my word.
It's a neighbor's boyfriend.
Boyfriend's child.
My neighbor's boyfriend's child. Excuse me. My neighbor's boyfriend's child just peed on my car in front of my very own eyes.
Wow.
There were a million responses to this. People were going crazy on this one. Yeah. It sounds really petty. She says, but I work hard every month to afford my car. Mm. And the body corporate apparently can't issue fines or warnings, she says. And they won't do anything about it. She asks, is there anything I can do legally, like lay a charge at a police station? So, guys, what's the answer? Ian, you want to take this one?
I'll take this one.
Please do.
Okay, when it comes to laying a charge, number one, if you've got her boyfriend's 17-year-old child is peeing against the car, yes, you can, or malicious damage to property. Whether they'll prosecute it or not is always debatable. But if the child, and let's be realistic, it sounds more like this will be a smaller kid, maybe 4 or 5. No, you cannot. Probably the best thing will be a strongly worded letter to the neighbor and a bill from, and sending them a copy of the bill from the car wash center rather than
One of the members of Legal Talk South Africa's Bossy Bosman. It's always Bossy Bosman or Blackie Swart. It's Bossy Bosman. He says, how about a good little hiding? That should solve the problem.
No, that you can't, because will get charged with assault.
No.
Okay, so at the moment, I think hitting your own child is uncertain, the law at the moment. And I know the Human Rights Commission and international organizations are calling on our government to stop parents from hitting their children. Mm. I think at the moment you can, but you must be careful because you could be charged with assault. So
I think there's also a big difference between hitting and hiding. So
I think either way, I know that in certain countries there's an outright ban on smacking your child. Countries like Denmark, Germany, Spain, you can't touch your own child. Mm. And I mean, being a father of a 6-year-old, sometimes I want to give him a good clap, but you can't. I get someone else to do it. It's a strange story. My little boy, we were invited over to someone's house. My little boy, it was a brand new house. It was a housewarming. Mm. And my little boy smashed their window by mistake. they just moved in. They were insured, fortunately. Mm. A child under 10, and Ian and Marisa, you both know this, does not have the capacity to know the difference between right and wrong. Mm. Mm-hmm. So any child under 10 cannot be charged criminally.
Well, legally we say they don't know the difference between
It actually goes even, says even past that, depending on the child's maturity. It can actually extend all the way to 14. Mm.
If you allow your kid, however, to run around a supermarket kind of unattended supervised and unwatched, and he breaks something and he's doing it in front of you could be liable even if he's under 10. So
you'll be the one liable for
liable as the father if you let him loose
of your ward.
It's the same thing if your pet goes ahead and actually bites somebody. You're responsible for your child, you're responsible for your animals.
Well, except if you had to beware of the dog sign up.
Even that's a bit debatable.
It depends. We're lawyers. It depends. To just get back to her question about the car, she doesn't quite go into the severity of how this feud is going. Mm. And people do, it's quite a new act, but you do have access to the Protection Against Harassment Act. And you can get an interim court order. So if there's some sort of feud going on that the neighbor or the neighbor's boyfriend is actually harassing her,
or putting the child up to doing it,
and it's a constant thing. It's not a once-off sort of event. She does have that access. She can go again to her local magistrate's court and ask about a protection order. But it must be sort of a severe harassment every week. This is happening, and it's a constant sort of barragement.
And there must also be a risk to it that the person is suffering some form of harm. And at the end of the day, something as nebulous as peen is not going to go ahead and really cause them any significant harm. So this act must be used with a bit of caution. And that's where, because it can become open to a great deal of abuse as well.
Yeah,
and it does. Harm that you talk about is being defined in the act, in the very act, and it means any mental, psychological, physical, or economic harm, any of those.
Yeah.
And that's what I mentioned last week as well, Lance.
Yeah, she doesn't quite give us the extent of it. And if this is just the straw that broke the camel's back, that's one thing. If it's an isolated incident, then soap and water.
And it's also the case of have to look at who the child actually is. At the end of the day, if they're putting their teenage child up to doing it, as opposed to a 4-year-old who just goes and urinates on the car, it's not really that much. And that child can't really say whether he is or isn't being put up to it, because you can't put them in the box.
Ituma Leng wants to know, and it's not the only person who's ever asked this question. I've been asked this by people. Is it possible to be divorced in secret? No. Why do people think it's possible?
Look, it isn't possible. Yeah. The same way as you have to be at your own marriage ceremony, you have to actually be there.
Or at your own funeral,
You have to be there. Those are set events. There's no way to divorce someone in secret, because the summons itself, unlike in other matters, it has to personally be served, unless you have the leave of the court, obviously, but we're not going to get basic things, is that you have to be served personally with that divorce summons.
Yeah.
And so you would have to know that there is something going on. It isn't something that you can do on the sly.
You know what happens, Marisa? I think often people get served with the summons and they ignore that like they ignore a normal civil summons.
Correct.
Unbeknown to them, the next step would be for the person to get a divorce. That's why they say it's their secret. When you get a divorce summons and you neglect it, you're going to get a divorce against you.
You're going to get a default judgment, so to speak. You're going to get an unopposed divorce against you because you didn't take the necessary steps to enter into either a negotiation or to oppose it. But there ought not to be any way for a divorce to be secret. Yeah. I do know, obviously, there are back channels, but no, there should not be.
Cool. Here's something on parenting.
If I can just interject on one aspect, because ultimately, at the end of the day, and this leads off from what Marie said, and that is, if that summons has not actually been served on the person, there is also an element of fraud that can be attached, and that in itself will go ahead and can contribute to a completely different result as well. So the fact is, if you're hiring your brother, if a woman wants to get divorced, and she's hiring her brother to pitch up and say she's her husband, well, then that's fraud, and that's going to have a repercussion to it.
Serious repercussions. Sure. Yeah.
Okay. Here's something on parenting plans that we always want to talk about. It comes from Bernie. He says, my partner and I split up a few months ago. We have a son together, 14 months old. I've made three attempts to set up a parenting plan. I've made three attempts. So he says, first time he told me I can go to court alone. Second, he told me we can do everything my way. He'll just sign whatever. And the third time, I sent him an email to get info from him so that my lawyer can set it up. But it's almost 2 weeks later and still no reply. And then Anine Labaskakhni says, rather book a visit, she writes to him, with the family advocate at the children's court and set up the parenting plan. So the question to you, family law attorneys, is can I go to the family advocate or should I go to a lawyer or what's my best bet?
My view is if you have funds available, you can go to, for example, the Family Life Center or a social worker to assist with the drafting of a parenting plan simply because they understand the best interests of the children, and really a parenting plan deals with kids. I think that after that process, a lawyer should check it for the wording and make sure that it tightens those little sort of nuts and bolts that lawyers do and make sure it's okay. And then a court can process that. If you don't have funds available, you are entitled, the family advocate is there to assist with mediation free of charge. And so you go to the family advocate within your area, Joburg, Pretoria, Durban, wherever, and they will then start mediation with that person and get them in there and try and negotiate a parenting plan. So again, there are many ways to sort of go about it, but you know, personally, I feel the best way to go about it is if it's simple and it's agreed upon, but this is not that instance. If it's simple and agreed upon, a lawyer can draft it, but if it's more complex and there's no agreement, then perhaps a bit of mediation by a suitably mental health, you know, sort of mentally qualified person that can be a social worker, a clinical psychologist, they can then assist those parties to try and reach an agreement.
Ian, you want to comment on this?
I've got a slightly different view, not entirely, but that's why it's a debate, especially on this, because the law is actually at the moment and a little bit of debate on this. First of all, mediation, albeit that it could be unsuccessful, must first be sought from what it's looked at. But that's where it becomes the aspect with attorneys first. Unfortunately, with the family advocate, and yes, because you've got to deal with the fact of funds and financial means. The problem is at the moment they are so backlogged in most of their jurisdictions that you could be waiting anything from 8 months to a year and a half, sometimes even 2 years, for them to come up with any type of parenting plan recommendation. People still dispute whether or not it's correct because they feel it's a copy and paste job. So obviously if you have got the means, it is preferable to go to a person who is in private practice in that type of way. And obviously before you end up doing that, you'd probably end up having to go to an attorney, because to be able to gain access from one route, it's a starting block to be able to help, because it is legally related. So ultimately the point would actually be is that the importance of lawyers, and especially when it comes to helping with other, and this is depends totally on the attorney themselves, how their own moral code and ethical code, as Marisa was actually saying, is will try and actually get this process moving quicker and get the thing resolved. Put some pressure also and positive pressure on the parties to be reasonable with one another, because this is a long-term plan, not something short-term. So I think the involvement of an attorney is actually pivotal in certain of these. Obviously, if you don't have the means, look at the supporting associations as well as perhaps getting advice from legal aid.
Are the supporting associations charging the people?
Look, I don't want to talk for them.
We're talking of people that can't afford an attorney. Sir, obviously, if you can afford an attorney, you go to one. You go to a lawyer. I'm a lawyer. You come to us and we'll help you. That's what our job is. You go to a doctor when you're sick. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But if you don't have the money, you've got to find an alternative. And that's the issue.
Like FAMSA, I know, they charge, but they charge very, very nominally.
Like what? Like,
I think last time I spoke to Family Life Centre, they sort of said, look, it's case dependent, so they talk to the parties and they do a means test. So it isn't necessarily, so if you fall under pro bono, they might assist you pro bono. But if you earn but you earn more than that, they might adjust their fees. I am not 100%.
What's it called? FAMSA?
Family Life Center.
Which is the same.
Okay, guys, there's one issue I've got to correct here.
Absolutely.
There's a woman called Jacqueline who replied to Bernie. She said, and let me finish this until we comment. She says, as far as I know, if there's no existing parenting plan, you have no obligation to let him see the child. And then Ray Green, the founder of the site, says, and well done, Ray, he says, wrong advice. And she was giving wrong advice.
Absolutely.
And this is the scare of people who think they know the law and don't. Yeah. You cannot. Or you answer that, Marisa.
Yeah, look, when you have a child with someone, whether you have a plan in place or not, the law prevails. And whether you're married or unmarried, if the father has those rights, and I mean, I don't know in this particular instance, it seems that way, then he has a right to see his kid. Mm. Whether there's an agreement to place or not, of course, practically, there's a bit more of a leeway onto time and how, etc. But certainly not having an agreement in place, it doesn't change that he's allowed to see his child. Have, and in fact, the law doesn't just say he's allowed to, but it says that the other parent must encourage and facilitate. The law actually says that. Mm. So it isn't just that you must facilitate it and make the child available, so to speak, but you must be, oh, excited, you're going to see daddy, that's great, let's
go.
It's really great. Because parents are supposed to co-parent. They are supposed to work together for the betterment of their child's future in a normal environment. I'm not talking about, obviously, the difficult situations, but in a normal environment, whether you like that person or not, it doesn't matter.
And if a father or mother does not pay maintenance, also doesn't mean you can withhold the visitation rights.
Absolutely.
You can't. It's trite and cliched. Mm. It's what's in the best interest of the child. That's what it's about.
Exactly. Yeah. And so, look, I mean, if the father has the means, then obviously you as the other parent, you have the obligation to go to maintenance court and enforce your child's right to get maintenance. So then you must go and do that. You're going to say, I'm going to withhold the child from him. Mm. That's not the way that it works, because that's not what is best for that child. So I think it is important to understand at any stage, whatever you're doing, it's child first. It really is.
Absolutely.
Well, this advice, if I can say, is actually terrible advice. Unfortunately, a lot of people actually give it.
Yes.
And it's almost bordering now on the unlawful, because there's been a lot of debates on how the Children's Act can be amended to actually penalize people. Yep. In fact, there's already provisions that
I feel, we can get into the technicalities, but I feel there is already provision in the Act that it says it is a parenting agreement in place. And so, you know, if you then withhold a child, it's a criminal offence. And so it needs to be sort of further than that, but then it becomes difficult to understand.
Jacqueline, be careful, my darling. You gave wrong advice and you could land the person in jail and yourself.
Yeah, I do.
So just go start off there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I do want to say, though, that if a parent will not agree to a parenting plan, you are not without option. Obviously, you can go to a lawyer, but if you don't have funds, again, local magistrate's court, go to your children's court, and they can make an order that actually helps as a parenting plan. It's a court order.
Okay, we've got 2 minutes left. I just want to tackle something that's very contentious, and it's been asked all over. Pension monies on divorce, who gets what?
They're in. So it depends on how you married.
Yep.
Yes.
If you're married in community of property, they are part of the joint estate.
Same as accruals.
Correct. So, except, of course, if they are specifically excluded in your antenuptial contract, correct, then they are excluded.
Yeah, so that's what we've got to make provision for, all yes, those things in yeah, the antenuptial contract. Yeah.
And that's yeah, why antenuptial contracts have to be drafted carefully yeah, by an expert who knows what they're doing, because these cookie-cutter, cut-and-paste things, mm, it doesn't help.
Do you remember we did a show together about yeah, 2 years ago? We yeah, had a couple in studio that were getting married. Mm. And we told them, just make sure your antenuptial make contract, sure. I hope they yeah, got a good one.
I do hope yeah, so, because it is probably in divorce matters 90% of the litigation we see.
Yeah.
You have to be clear on your intention. So it's in. That's
and
the easy answer.
And also, just to clarify, in the divorce order, it must be now clarified even further, because mm, in terms of the provisions of the Pensions and Provident Fund Act, mm, the pension companies are insistent upon certain clauses mm, being included. Otherwise, they don't pay out. Mm.
It's been a great show, Lionel.
Yeah, yeah, no, it has been great. But just to actually end, at the legal, at the Wits Legal Clinic, they do offer pro bono legal services, as well as UNISA. Yes. And also the Law Society actually has got a pro bono department yes, that actually caters for people who cannot actually afford.
As well as pro bono.org.
Yes, yeah, pro bono.org.
Law Society, we always mention this, but again, mm-hmm, Law Society offers a free consultation scheme with an attorney.
Yes. Certainly.
You just check up with them which attorneys are part of the scheme, and you go to the attorney, he gives you a free consultation. Mm-hmm. I think 99% of attorneys would do that.
Certainly.
Come to me, I'll give yeah, you a free consultation.
And also, there's a lot of us that sit at the court and do pro bono help desks,
oh, yes,
as well at a domestic violence court, at maintenance courts,
High Court.
Thank you, guys.
And so, then you get us out.
That is great. Thank you.
Lionel Makoko-Klele, thank you for being here. I'm Gary Hertzberg. I'd like to thank Ian Ellis and Marisa Kurz, both of you. We've given your websites, well, I suppose Clark Attorneys.
Clark's Attorneys.
And my email's ian@alice.co.za.
Okay, A-L-L-I-S. Yes. Many thanks, a great show. Thank you to Legal Talk. I'm sure your members have learned a lot today. We'll be back. We're going to run this again in the future. Goodbye
thank
to
you
all. Thanks for listening.
Thank you.
Law, like you've never heard it before. The Laws of Life with Gary Hertzberg on CliffCentral.com. CliffCentral.com.